Welcome to Caffeine, Crime and Canines, a podcast brought to you by two girls who love their dogs, love coffee, but most importantly, love true crime.
Hello.
Hi, Lucky. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good.
What are you doing?
Oh, not much. I'm really tired.
Me too.
Really
I think
tired
it's the
this
heat.
Week.
Yeah. I think the heat has just gotten to me. I don't know why.
I saw a TikTok and it was like, are all Melburnians feeling tired? Like it's like it must just be
something
in the air. Yeah.
I've had a pretty lazy weekend as well. Like I feel like I have not been productive this weekend, but I'm just like meh, you know what I mean?
Yeah, me too. Me too.
What else? What's
obviously, Taylor Swift came out on Friday, the movie.
Oh, wait, is this, what do you mean? Like, as in the one that she released in the cinema or she's released another one? I have no idea.
I think it's the one in the cinema, the Eras Tour, the Los Angeles concert. It's on Disney Plus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, so you can stream it now.
Yeah.
Got you. Did you? Actually, you know what? I think I actually saw your story that you watched it.
Yeah, I watched it on Friday.
And?
Yeah, it was good. It was long.
It was. Like, it was over 3 hours.
I knew she played for 3 hours, but it's like when you sit and watch it, it's like freaking hell.
I know. It's actually crazy. And to think that she does this like night after night.
I know.
It's impressive.
I know.
So impressive.
I actually saw the funniest. So obviously my TikToks this week have just like consumed by Kate Middleton. But
oh my gosh, yes.
Funniest thing. We have to talk about it next. But I saw the funniest thing that it said Kate Middleton will resurface and she'll announce like Reputation Taylor's version.
That is so funny. Did you dive into, because you did tell me last week, you're like, I'm going to look into theories and let you know next week. So did you?
Yeah, like. Yeah, I've been, like, it's just, like, consuming my TikTok this week. And there is so many different theories, isn't there? Have you looked into it much or?
Not a lot. Can I just tell you? Because I'm pretty sure it was after we recorded, they released that freaking
photo. Yeah.
Right? And that definitely got my attention because that is just freaking odd. Like, as if she's an amateur photographer doing her own little edits to send out to the press. Like, I feel like that is just so dodgy. Like, that
well,
did
she
not
is
happen.
A, she does like photography. Like, she does yes. take photos, but the whole how they made her take the fall for it and be like, oh, yeah. I'm not very good at it. Like, so stupid. And then because of that, people have obviously gone back and looked at other photos that the royal family have released and found other kind of cross edits and, you know, photos of her face being used in other photos and, like, they found all this other stuff. But, like, it is very, very sus, I think, now. I'm starting to. Yeah.
I'm the same, although I did send you something this week. And you know what? Like, this is more probably, like, a not conspiracy thing that could just make, like, it makes sense to me. And it's from, I know I always talk about her Instagram account, but she, I just love all her research and everything. So from House in Habit, and she says that she had a source that says no, that Kate didn't have like abdominal surgery.
Surgery.
It was actually like, yeah, a surgery like on her bowel, and that she's got a bag. And obviously just to, like, do you know what I mean? Because that is a little bit embarrassing, just to not embarrass her. They said it was an operation on her abdomen, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that she's also suffering from an eating disorder. So I feel like these two things, like, that does make sense, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've seen that one, that she's been suffering with bulimia, and then the ambulance being called on Christmas Day or the day after Christmas Day was because she had some type of health complication regarding that.
Yeah.
And then there's other theories that the surgery didn't go well and she's been in a coma this whole time. Another theory is that William had an affair with that Rose lady.
Yes.
And that she's just, like, you know, lost her mind over it, which is obviously would make sense. Then I saw a theory that William is, like, physical and they had, like, an altercation.
Is this because he had bruising on his neck?
Yeah, but then also Prince Harry in his book said that William can be quite aggressive and physical.
I don't know so how I feel like, about freaking Harry yeah. and Meg.
Did you I know.
Freaking goes and makes an Instagram. Like,
I know.
While all just going on. Like, I feel like she's just clueless. Like,
she is.
Yeah. She's just absorbed in her own little, like, I don't even know, bubble. Like, I think she just has no idea what the heck people actually think of her.
No. Yeah, I just, yeah, she just, I don't get it. Not a fan of her. But, yeah, lots of different theories.
Let us know your theories. I'd like to know what our listeners think.
And then the other theory is obviously, like, you know how Thomas Kingston passed away a few months ago, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that she was having an affair with him, like Kate was, and that he, like obviously the royal family found out, faked his death, and then they're just like trying to deal with her.
Hey, but wait a sec, wasn't he dating her sister? He was dating Pippa. Did you know that?
I think Pippa's dated a lot of them. Like Pippa dated Prince Harry at one point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty wild.
It is.
I just want to bring up the ones that I found.
Go for it.
More medical, like if you go with the fact that she did have surgery, one that she received an organ transplant because it would make sense, like the recovery time, one that she obviously had life-threatening surgery or something like that, that William assaulted Kate. That's why the ambulance was called. Because you know that the ambulance got called and then that was that. And then they released that she's having surgery.
Yes, exactly. So it wasn't like a planned thing. Well, that sort of points to the conclusion sort of that it wasn't planned.
Yeah. Another is that Kate's on strike. So obviously William's done something or something's happened and she's like, well, you know, like she's trying to negotiate, I suppose. Mm. One that she has the eating disorder. Lots of eating disorder ones.
Hey, can I tell you, if the Queen was alive, I feel like it wouldn't have gone this far. Like, I don't, but it's probably still like the same PR and everything like that. I just don't know why everything is not ordered at the moment. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like the whole family itself is like all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Another is that Prince Charles is drafting a new succession to the throne and that would mean Kate and William are going to be king and queen fairly soon because of his cancer. But she's like, well, if I'm going to be queen, this has to change, this has to change, this has to change, and she's negotiating with them. I don't know why that would mean that she wouldn't be in the public eye, though.
Yeah, exactly. I think
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, well, yeah, who knows? See if she comes out in April and see what happens.
Yeah, I am very curious. It's not even that, like, April's just a few weeks away, so I guess we'll see. We will see.
Very interesting.
But I did want to tell you one other thing before we get started, and I don't know why this has triggered this, but honestly, the last few weeks, since we've been doing Melbourne-based murders, I've been having like bad dreams, like nightmares that someone's after me, Lockie.
Is it the same person?
I'm not even kidding. I'm like, how weird's that? It must be something in my subconscious because it's in Melbourne. They're unsolved. It means they're just walking around, and obviously we're in Melbourne. So I'm just like, I don't know what the heck has caused this, but it has freaked me out a bit. But yeah, I just did want to tell you that because I thought it's a bit funny. Like when I wake up, I'm always like, oh, and then I'm like, Karina, don't be silly. So yeah.
I wanted to shout out, Seima bought us some coffees this week. So I wanted to shout out on the podcast and say thank you for that.
Thank you, Seima.
Yeah. I'm trying to keep track. I feel like I never check it. And then I see that there's a few there. So I'll have to make sure I shout out to everyone.
Yes, for sure. Also, actually, another thing which is my fault last week, when you covered Nanette, Steph had also requested it. So I just wanted to say.
Lots more people that did. I feel like I'd seen it in the requests like that many times.
Okay, because I was like flicking through the requests this week and I was like, shivers. Like, we didn't mention Steph, but yeah, thank you. Everyone, keep your requests coming. We are getting through them. So, and
yes,
I'm loving I'm loving the requests. I feel like a lot of the times it's things I've never, like cases I've never heard of, and I always get really into them. So
yeah. Yeah.
But this week's case, Lockie, are you ready to get into this week's case?
I'm ready.
No matter how well you hit it off with somebody on the dating site, you don't really know who they are.
This was one of the strangest, most unpredictable cases I'd ever worked.
Prosecutors allege a love triangle turned fatal.
I was starting over as a single person, and I was determined to enjoy it. That's when Carrie Farber came into my life. Our first date, I had made it clear I was absolutely not going to be tied down. She says, Lord, this is just fun. And I was like, oh my God, yes, I'm in. I hopped back online. That's when Liz came into my life. She was very smiley, energetic. She liked motorcycles. I had a motorcycle. I was match made in heaven. And then one morning, I get a text from Carrie Farber. It was a total shock. The messages started slowly, but it ramped up.
The implication was, if I can't have you, nobody will.
I was on a road to having a mental breakdown.
I thought I'd seen it all. I hadn't seen anything like this.
Then things got worse.
This is now a complete different investigation.
I was terrified.
I've got to catch this person, but I can't find her.
I was trying to find a pattern in the chaos.
I found something that was missed by the original investigators.
The case took a 180 just like that.
It was hard to know what was real and what I might be imagining.
At this point, the stakes were high.
Who knows what they're capable of?
911, what's your emergency?
I've been shot.
So this week we are covering Lover, Stalker, Killer, which dropped on Netflix a few weeks ago. And I do want to say thank you to Casey, who did tell us to watch it. She's like, you girls would love this. And I absolutely did love it, right up our alley. But we thought we'd cover it now, even though it's a new request, only because obviously it's dropped on Netflix.
Yes.
So, Lockie, quickly, did you know about this case?
Not before I watched the doco. And even, like, I feel like it's so... there's so many layers to this case. Like, even though I watched the doco like a week or so ago, I still don't think I can remember the ending. Like, okay, I feel like there's that many layers that I'm like, I feel like I struggled to keep up a bit, but I didn't know about it.
See, you know what's funny? Even when Casey was like, when we were messaging back and forth, and when me and you were talking about it last week, I was like, I have no idea what this case is. I'm not kidding. I got 10 minutes into the Netflix doco and I was like, fudge, I actually know this case because my faves over at Housewives of True Crime covered it a few years back. And then there's a few other like random podcasts and YouTubes that I'd watched on it. But what I actually did, I just thought I'd mix it up a bit. So I went and researched, wrote my notes, and then I watched the Netflix doco just so it wasn't exactly the same. So hopefully I can give you a little, like, do you know what I mean, a little bit of a different coverage, Lockie, and you can, like find out some new stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is one of the craziest love triangles we have ever come across, like hands down, and probably will ever come across. So our story today begins in 2012 with a guy named Dave Krupa. Dave was a 36-year-old bachelor who had just moved to Omaha, Nebraska. He had recently split with his long-term partner of 12 years, Amy Flora. The two had two children together, a boy and a girl. And when Amy moved to Omaha to be closer to her parents, Dave tagged along, wanting to stay connected with his kids.
Yeah.
He found a job managing an auto repair shop and settled into an apartment in Omaha. But being new in town with no friends around, Dave found himself feeling a little lonely. He wanted to get back into casual dating but didn't know how to go about it. I can imagine he was pretty rusty. So around this time, internet dating was taking off and he thought he would give it a whirl. So he jumped on and made a profile on Plenty of Fish. The first person he connected with was Shanna Elizabeth Goya, who went by Liz. I don't know, is that how you pronounce her name? Goya.
Yeah, I think I feel like it's Goya. That's how they were saying it on the
thing. Yeah. I thought, you know what? I said it, but I'm like, it doesn't look like this. So maybe I've said it. Anyway, Dave thought Liz was really pretty, so they set up a date. It turns out the two had a lot in common. Liz was a single mother, also of two children, a boy and a girl who were similar ages to Dave's children. They bonded over sci-fi, heavy metal, and motorcycles. Early on, Dave made it clear that he was not looking for anything serious, just some low-key fun as he navigated being single for the first time in his adult life. They hung out on and off for the next few months with no strings attached, just enjoying each other's company. About 6 months later, this is in October 2012, an, quote, extremely attractive woman walked into Dave's auto shop. Her name was Carrie Farver, and she had bought in her Ford Explorer for maintenance. Dave thought she was way out of his league, but he did feel like a little spark between them. He says, like, she was showing him something inside her vehicle, and when they were standing there, they were, like, really close, and he could just feel tension. He wanted to ask her out, but he thought it might be a little inappropriate, so he held back. But then he stumbled across her profile on Plenty of Fish, and this was just a few weeks later. He sent her a message saying, "Hey, I know you," and she responded, "I know you too." Pretty smooth, I thought. He made his move the next time she brought her car into the shop. And I think, again, this again was just like a few weeks later. They exchanged numbers and they arranged to go out for dinner. So I want to tell you a little bit about Carrie. Carrie was a 37-year-old single mum born on November 30th in 1964 to Nancy and Dennis. Her parents split when she was quite young, but they stayed on good terms. Her mum remarried her high school sweetheart. His name was Mark, who became like a second father to Carrie. Carrie fell pregnant in her early 20s, but continued studying computers, graduating just 10 weeks after having her baby in 1997.
Wow.
I know, right? So she was a smart cookie. She was really into computers and numbers. You know, every time I think about computer programming and all that sort of thing, I always think of you, Lockie.
Me.
Yes, because I remember you always, even when you're pregnant, you're like, you had, remember you had downloaded some app that like gets you into programming? Do you remember this?
Anyway, now my brain's just gone.
Oh, really?
I also don't think Elsie has the right type of brain for it either.
That's so funny. So Carrie lived in Macedonia, Iowa, with her 14-year-old son, Max, in her grandparents' old place. She was very close with her mother, who lived nearby and would help her take care of Max. In 2012, Carrie was doing really well for herself. Her life was getting on track, despite having been married and divorced twice. In her 20s, after having Max, she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and struggled a little bit with the diagnosis. She spent a week in bed and hated being on the medication, going on and off the medication like quite a few times. This is early on because she just did not like the way it made her feel. However, by her late 30s, she had come to accept her diagnosis. She was regularly seeing a therapist, owned her own home, and had just landed her dream job in computer programming. And this was at a company named West Corporation, where she was making good money. On October 29th, 2012, Dave and Carrie went on their first date to a local Applebee's. After hitting it off, Dave invited Carrie back to his place. She accepted but cautioned that she was not in the market for anything serious. Dave says he felt like he had just hit the jackpot. Because obviously,
yes, it was like what he wanted as well.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Right. So they had just stepped through the door at Dave's place when the apartment bell chimed. He was surprised to find Liz standing there. She had been trying to reach him all night, hoping to pick up some of the stuff she'd left at his house. Dave, obviously, I cannot. How awkward would this be, Lockie?
Oh my God. So
I'm cringing thinking about it. Anyway, Dave explained that he was on a date, but she, as in Liz, was adamant that it couldn't wait until the morning. Dave, probably a little flustered, went back up and explained to Carrie the situation, right? She laughed it off and told him not to worry, suggesting they just reschedule. As the two women passed each other in the hallway, they made eye contact but didn't exchange a word. After Dave sorted things out with Liz, he called Carrie to apologize, who invited him over to her house. She was on the way home. Because remember she, well, I actually haven't even said, but she did live quite a bit away.
Yeah.
So the 40-minute plus drive did not deter Dave, who ended up spending the night at hers. Over the next 2 weeks, Dave and Carrie hung out whenever they could. It wasn't just physical. Dave really enjoyed spending time and talking with Carrie. Quote, she was extremely intelligent. She was much smarter than I am. On the week of November 11th, Carrie was starting a new project at work that would keep her working back late. Since her workplace was just a few blocks from Dave's, he offered her to stay at his apartment like during this project. And this would just save her up to 2 hours of travel time a day. So it just makes sense, yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Carrie accepted, knowing Max would be okay with her parents. Things were going well and Dave was starting to question his no commitment rule. On the early morning of Tuesday, November 13th, Dave kissed Carrie goodbye and headed to work. He was surprised to receive a text from Carrie just a few hours later asking if they could move in together. Dave quickly shot down the idea and was shocked by the tone of texts he received back. All right, these are the texts I'm going to read them to you, right? Fine. I don't ever want to see you again. Go away. I'm dating someone else. I hate you. Dave was confused as they had had discussions and seemed to be on the same page, like regarding their relationship. Dave wasn't sure what he'd be walking into when he got home that day, but when he returned, there was no sign of Carrie. All her stuff was gone, like her toothbrush, her clothes, everything, right? He thought that that was just the end of it, and I think he says that he was a little bit sad because obviously they were getting along so well. But just 2 days after this, Carrie started blowing up his phone. I hate you. You've ruined my life. You're a terrible person. These are just like some of the texts she's sending him. As the days went on, the texts and emails got worse. You're a bastard. I'm going to destroy the things you care about. Your life will be ruined. Carrie seemed to also be fixated on Dave's ex, Liz. She's a whore. You shouldn't be with someone like that. She's responsible for destroying us. Now, Dave already, I'm assuming, is very confused, but he was horrified to find out that he's not the only one receiving all this abuse. Dave hadn't seen Liz for a while when she reached out, asking him how Carrie got her details and why she was getting abusive messages from her. Dave felt awful when Liz mentioned she thought that Carrie may have keyed her car. The threatening texts and emails kept pouring in from all different numbers and email addresses linked to Carrie. They're like variations of her name. And with the numbers, like the phone number kept changing. And although Dave kept blocking them, do you know what I mean? They just kept coming through. And he could tell it was Carrie because I feel like the tone was just the same. They were relentless, and she was even prank calling his work and home nonstop. I'm going to read you some more texts he was receiving, right? I will do what I can to make you suffer. We belong together, Dave. My favorite thing to do is stand outside and stare at you. I hate you so much that I want to drive a knife in your heart. I will destroy your life and take your happiness. During that same chaotic week, Carrie's family began to worry. She had texted her mum about a new job in Kansas she was taking and about her plans for Max to join her, which caught them completely off guard. Like, from what Carrie's mum knew, she was really happy working her dream job.
Yeah.
Despite keeping in touch via text, nobody actually spoke to her, which was strange since Carrie and Nancy usually talked daily. Nancy brushed it off, planning to see Carrie in a few days, but when she didn't show up for her half-brother's wedding on Friday the 16th of November, so this is just literally like she left Dave's on the Tuesday and this is now the Friday, right?
Yeah.
Nancy sounded the alarm and reported her missing. Max was meant to be an usher, and her mum couldn't imagine Carrie ever missing it. Nancy felt like the police didn't take her seriously after mentioning Carrie's bipolar diagnosis. They did reach out to Dave, knowing that she was staying with him, but he showed them all the messages and emails he'd received after turning down her suggestion to move in together. They also checked with her workplace, confirming she'd resigned via text. It seemed like they thought there wasn't much they could do if a grown woman was obviously struggling with a breakup and wanted to start over.
Yeah, like everything pointed to her just starting fresh.
Yeah, exactly.
Starting fresh life, yeah.
And she had even texted her police and even her family saying, I'm not missing. I just don't want to come home right now.
Yeah.
So about a month or so into this whole mess, Dave stumbled across Carrie's SUV just sitting there in his apartment complex car park. She had threatened to move into the complex, so Dave was worried.
Yeah.
Cops did check it out, but the car was spotless except for a mint container which was sitting in a cup holder with an unknown fingerprint on it. Like, this print was not Carrie's. But other than that, the car, it was like the car had been wiped clean pretty much.
Yep.
As months and years passed, the stalking, abuse, and threats towards Dave, Liz, and later on Amy escalated. Multiple incidents were reported to police, and there seems there was like an investigator working the stalking case. They just could not track her down. Dave and Liz bonded over the abuse. Often they would be sitting on the couch together and both their phones would start going off at the same time, and they just dubbed her like Crazy Carrie. It sort of just became the norm for them.
Mm.
But it wasn't just texts and emails. They were being stalked in person too. Dave recalled one chilling incident, quote, I was sitting in my lazy boy with my feet up watching TV and I get a text saying, I see you. You're sitting in your chair with your feet propped up wearing a blue shirt. And all these things were true. So could you imagine Dave's probably like, what the heck, right? And there's times that Dave says that he like went out to see like, where the heck is she watching me from? Like he's like, where is she? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Carrie seemed to have eyes on Dave, describing his every move, his outfit, and even customers that were coming in and out of his shop with eerie accuracy. So she was definitely watching him.
Yeah.
The bond between Dave and Liz only fueled Carrie's rage further. She broke into Liz's home, vandalizing the garage wall with whore from Dave, like she had spray painted this on her garage door. Another time she broke into Dave's, smashing a window. And can I just say, his windows were smashed like with bricks multiple times. Like this was just
the norm. Happening.
Yeah, the norm. Exactly right. This particular time, though, she smashed a window, broke into his house. She scattered because Liz obviously had been staying at his. So she got all of Liz's clothes, right? She stabbed and shredded them with a knife and, like, threw them all over his house. And then she wrote in red lipstick on the bedroom wall, "Go away, whore." And this is, as I said, in red lipstick. Like, just freaking, like, this is nuts, right?
Mm, yeah.
Carrie even went as far as creating a fake obituary for Liz. And in it, she calls her a whore and a man stealer.
Oh, my God.
This is after sending Dave a horrifying email threatening Liz's life and attaching a photo of a woman bound in a car trunk. In this email, she had attached instructions on how to break up with Liz.
My God.
Right? Dave's workplace also became a target with her vandalizing his workplace in orange spray paint, saying that he was a woman beater. And can you imagine, like, all this stuff, right? Obviously, like, he almost lost his job. Because think about it. The place is getting vandalized. Their customers are being watched. There's nonstop calls. People can't even call to make appointments for their cars. Like, that's a lot for a workplace to take on. But at the same time, it's not even Dave's fault. And police are just like, what? Like, they can't find her. They've sort of just given up. Like, what the heck are they? You know what I mean? Like, they're not, even though someone's investigating it, they cannot catch her.
Yeah, I think they're at a loss too, because I think at this point, like, they were looking, like, she was obviously watching him and they were trying to find where the hell she could be watching him from, and they just couldn't. They just couldn't figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Then on August 17th, this is in 2013, Liz called Dave absolutely beside herself. Her house had been deliberately set on fire, resulting in the loss of her two dogs, a cat, and a you-know-what, Lucky, she had a pet. Oh, she had a pet snake. I can't even, but anyway. So all her pets perished in this fire. When Dave checked his email, Carrie had sent him the following. "I am not lying. I set that nasty whore's house on fire. I hope the whore and her kids die in it."
So horrible.
How scary.
Yeah.
In early 2015, Dave's high school friend witnessed the relentless barrage of threatening messages he received as they settled into bed. So this is a female friend, and Dave is seeing other females at this time. So him and Liz are sort of like on and off. He says that, like, Liz, like, he obviously felt really bad what was happening to Liz, and she was being, like, really supportive and sticking by him through this whole time. But again, they still weren't exclusive. I think Liz really wanted to be exclusive, and she was, like, begging him to, you know, be in a full committed relationship. And do you know what's something a little bit funny? I shouldn't laugh, but he said to her, like, she can have, like, a Wednesday or something. Like, I'll give you, like, one day of the week. You know what I mean? That you can have, like, and that's it. But he didn't want to fully commit to Liz. Yeah. But anyway, at this time, he's seeing a high school friend. So they settle into bed, and a loud crash shattered the peace, right? A brick was hurtled through his bathroom window.
And this is years after. This is 2015.
Yes, this is the start of 2015.
Mm.
So Dave's paranoia skyrocketed, which I think is like, he says that there were certain things, obviously the texts and stuff were normal, but to him, like, that's just how he had to live, but he was still paranoid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He bought a gun for protection and turned to alcohol to cope, gaining weight in the process. And he says he was just on the verge of a mental breakdown. No matter how many times he changed his number, Carrie always managed to track him down, bombarding him with texts, as I said, from various numbers and various email addresses. In 2015, Dave relocated. I think he moved from where he was living at the time, in hopes of shaking off Carrie's relentless pursuit. But the stalking persisted and unbelievably got worse as Carrie began to stalk and threaten Amy. And Amy's his ex, but this is the partner he was with for 12 years and they had two children together. But not only was she stalking Amy, she was also threatening and stalking Dave's children.
Yeah.
And in messages to Amy, she threatened to slit their throats.
How horrible.
I can't even. I cannot even. You know what, though? Like, I get that police obviously can't track her, but I feel like these are serious threats. And she's the threats she's made, like, she has burnt down Liz's home. And, like, obviously she is watching Dave. Like, it's crazy that police could not find her.
I know.
Now, come April 2015, detectives Ryan Avis and Jim Doty from do you want to say this, Lucky? Oh, there's no chance. Potawatomi. Is it?
Yeah, Potawatomi.
Potawatomi. Let's go with that. So these detectives from this county took an interest in the case. Obviously, they've heard the rumors. They've heard that, you know, her mum's reported her missing. This guy's being crazy stalked, and they asked if they could actually take the lead on this case. Now, they split the task, right? One of the detectives was working to prove that Carrie was alive, and the other was working to prove that she wasn't. I thought it was really interesting, sort of like how they went about investigating this case.
Yeah.
Both detectives quickly reached the same conclusion. No sightings or contact with Carrie for years. No bank account activity. She didn't have a vehicle. All her clothes and items were just left sitting in her closet at her home. Her home looked untouched, like all her medication's still there. So they suspected the worst, right?
Yeah.
When they reached out to Nancy, she was relieved that someone was finally taking her daughter's disappearance seriously. She knew deep down that something terrible had happened to Carrie. Carrie missed many family events over the years, but when Carrie missed her father's funeral in December of this is the same year. So this is just a month after she disappeared and she didn't attend the funeral, right? Despite apologizing to her mum on Facebook, Nancy sensed something was seriously wrong. She was really close with her father and she knew that her father was sick. So I think that was probably the first sign for Nancy that she wouldn't have just packed up and left knowing that her father was, do you know what I mean, like in his last few months of life. 2 weeks after her father's passing, and remember, Nancy was still close with her ex-husband, he appeared to Nancy in a vivid dream, reassuring her, quote, so Nancy has said that he came to her in a dream and he said, it's okay, Carrie is here with me.
Mm.
So she says she knew, but she was just trying to keep it together for Max. Over the next 3 years, Carrie sporadically reached out to her mum and Max, but only through texts and through Facebook. Early on, she had informed Nancy that she had sold her furniture and she sent her a photo of a check, right? And she asked Nancy if she could open up the house for the buyer to collect this stuff. But Nancy refused. She's like, I will only do this if you call me. And apparently a lot of this furniture was like antique furniture that belonged to her grandparents. So Nancy's like, there is no effing way that she has sold it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she refused to, do you know what I mean, go along with this. However, the messages started taking a nasty turn towards Nancy, accusing her of being a bad mother and controlling. She's like, I'm a grown woman. Like, I'll do, if I want to leave Max, I will. Like, do you know what I mean? So that, and Nancy's like, what the heck? You know what I mean? Like, this is just not. She's never been this way. Yeah, exactly. Now, despite getting their hopes up multiple times about receiving a call, Carrie never followed through. Nancy repeatedly urged her to call, emphasizing that hearing her voice was the only way that she could confirm her identity. Max, even one day, had just had enough and tried himself to verify her identity. And he just said, like, hi, this is through Facebook. And she had responded, like, hi, little man. And Max is like, what the F? Like, she has never called me this, ever. Yeah. Right? And he went on to ask her three questions. He asked, what is my middle name? What is the name of our first boxer? And what was my best friend's name? As a little kid, and she never responded. Nancy also noticed that the messages were riddled with grammatical errors, punctuation mistakes, and just spelling errors all over, right? This was unusual for Carrie, who was meticulous about punctuation and spelling.
Yeah.
As they re-examined Carrie's case file, this is police, they quickly ruled out Dave as a suspect, but Liz's involvement puzzled them as her name appeared frequently in the paperwork despite having no prior communication with Carrie before her disappearance.
Yeah.
So police like, why is she so obsessed, you know, with Liz? They discovered that in a text to her boss when she resigned, Carrie mentioned replacing herself with someone named Shanna Goya.
This is so funny.
Lucky. This is the most ridiculous thing I have heard. I actually cannot believe this, right? So Liz had submitted an application to take Carrie's job despite having no experience as like a computer programmer. What did she think? Like, what did she actually think? Lucky. Is this not wild? It's wildly stupid. This is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. Anyway, obviously she didn't get the job, but police are like, and you know what's even funnier? She put Carrie as her, what's it called? As her reference.
Reference.
Yes. Oh, what a dumbass. Anyway, additionally, they scrutinized the check Carrie had sent to her mum and confirmed that it was Liz's signature, right, on this check. So remember I was just saying about the how Carrie messaged her mum that she had sold all her furniture? So she had sold it to Liz, and police knew this, right? But when police went and spoke to Liz, this is at the time, so this is early, like 2012, 2013, Liz is like, oh my God, yeah, she's broken into my house. She's stolen my checkbook and she's made out like I've bought her furniture, but she's stalking me, right? And she had all these, you know, emails and texts to show the police. But then when police now are looking into it, they're like, if she stole your checkbook, why the heck is the handwriting and your signature match?
Yeah.
The checkbook. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, these things match. It doesn't make any sense to them. Detectives Jim and Ryan enlisted the help of Tony Carver. He was a digital forensic investigator who delved into Liz's phone data for when she reported the abuse in early 2013. So we're obviously at the moment, I'm telling you about 2015, but they've got data from Liz's phone from early 2013, right? Because she's a dumbass. She gave them her phone. Now they re-examined its content and found that Liz had called Carrie six times using star 67 before her disappearance. And they also found on her phone a photo of Carrie's car. And this photo was taken, I think it was on Christmas Eve. So this is after she's gone missing. So after she's left Dave's and before they found her car in Dave's car park. Right?
Yeah.
So how the heck does she have her car if she's got no idea? You know what I mean? They sent the fingerprint found in Carrie's car off for analysis and it came back as a match to Liz's. Though they lacked hard evidence against Liz, they were convinced that she was responsible for Carrie's disappearance and all the stalking. Now, around this time when they were piecing this together, Dave reported his gun missing to police. And this is around like the 4th of December 2015. Liz showed up to the station to report Amy was stalking her on Facebook. So police are like, and they're investigating. Like, could you imagine their faces, right? I think they say, like, it looked like it was like they couldn't believe their eyes that they're full investigating Liz. And then she walks in through the doors and they're like, what the heck's she doing here? Like, her ears must have been on fire, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe she was having dreams about getting caught because this is wild. Like, anyway, just the timing of all this. Now, she says, so Liz goes to the police and she says that she's worried because Dave's gun has been stolen from his home. And now his ex, Amy, is stalking her and she thinks that Amy took Dave's gun because Amy has access to Dave's house. Detectives took this opportunity to speak with Liz, pretending to investigate her stalking complaint. And they're really like, they're acting really dumb. They're like, oh, like, who's Liz and who's Dave? Like, these are they know everything, right?
Yeah, this is so funny, this part.
Isn't it? So they asked for permission to download the contents. This is obviously of a new phone to aid in their investigation of Amy. And this time around, she doesn't know this, but they're treating her like a suspect. So they download everything, like all the deleted data, everything. Digital forensics uncovered 20 to 30 fake email accounts. And this is in like variations of Carrie's name, right? And they also found an app allowing you to schedule text messages to be sent later. They also found photos of Liz tied up in a van that she had taken. And Lockie, do you know, I don't know if you've seen these photos. This chick, remember those photos I was telling you about earlier on that Dave got? And it was like a woman tied up in a van, but he couldn't see her face.
Yeah.
She didn't just like Google like woman in a van. This psycho got into a van, put duct tape on her face, Lockie, and was taking photos of herself in a van, different angles, trying not to show her face. She actually took these, like, set up a timer and took them herself.
Did you just walk past this on the street?
What the actual heck? Oh my god! It is. Oh, I have no words for how stupid this is. Why didn't you just Google fake woman, like woman in van? Maybe she obviously wanted Dave to panic, but she didn't want to show her face. It's just ridiculous the freaking extent she went to, which I'm going to tell you about after. But it is, insane. Anyway, that if you think that's bad, wait till you hear this. So obviously, like, police talk to her, whatever, she gives them the phone. Now, the following day, Liz called 911, reporting that she had been shot in the leg while walking around Big Lake Park, and this is in Council Bluffs, at night. This is, like, late afternoon night. If you think you're being stalked, as if you're going to go for a freaking walk by yourself to a park. Like, it's just crazy. Anyway, initially, she claimed that she didn't know the shooter's identity, but then later she alleged it was Amy who attacked her from behind and said, so you like fucking Dave, before shooting her. Police authorities were skeptical, but they did go and investigate Amy. And Amy has said, like, she was freaked the F out because, you know, like, police all rock up to her house with their guns drawn and take her in for questioning. Amy had a solid alibi, and apparently when they got to her house, they touched her car, and they could tell, like, she hadn't driven her car. But you know, Lockie, which I haven't put this in notes, but I don't know if you know this, you know that she agreed to a polygraph test, and do you know she failed it? This is why I would never take a polygraph test. Yeah. She actually failed it, but obviously she was probably just so freaked out. Like, who knows? I don't know. Obviously why she failed it, but this is why you should never do a polygraph, because she's completely innocent, she had nothing to do with this, and she failed it. Anyway, they decided to use this to their advantage, like this whole situation, right, and pretended to investigate Amy as their suspect. They also mentioned Carrie to Liz. So obviously they're talking to Liz about the shooting, and they mention, like, Carrie, right? And they suggest that maybe Amy might have harmed her, because if she could shoot you, maybe we can't find Carrie anywhere, right? Maybe she's done something to Carrie. And Liz ate this up. Like, she was loving this. She's like, yeah, you know, like, she's into it.
Didn't they, like, ask her to help, like, oh, if you can find some emails or find stuff, like, it would be really helpful. And she was like, yeah, like, I'll go and have a look.
She's like, do you want me to mess her back? Like, if she messes with me, and they're like, oh, my goodness. Like, oh. Anyway, so, yes, exactly right. They're like, can you, you know, if you hear from her, anything will help. We're trying to build this case. So, of course, 4 days after their conversation, Liz received an email from Amy. And it was titled, I Shot You. Like, and in the email, she's threatening Liz, saying, you're lucky, like, I didn't kill you. I could have done so much worse, blah, blah, you know, like, all this stuff, right? Now, that she obviously is, like, excited to show investigators this email. But the investigators tell her, like, they still don't have enough evidence to charge Amy. And they falsely claim to Liz that they've actually found human remains that belong to Carrie, and that Amy is their prime suspect. So ultimately, they really want to get Amy on murdering Carrie. Like, so that's their end goal. That's what they're telling her, right? And if she comes across anything, like, they just need, like, a little bit more information to prove this. Anyway, a few days later, again,
Liz receives more emails.
Now, in this email, I won't give you the whole thing, but in this email, she says, I attacked her with a knife. I stabbed her 3 to 4 times in the chest and stomach area. I then took her and burned her. She also mentions that Carrie had a tattoo, I think, on her hip, right? And which obviously, like, a lot of people don't know. I think they had to confirm it with her ex-husband. Her ex-husband and her had gotten the same tattoo. So they confirmed that this tattoo is legit. Like, she would have to have had something to, like, how would she know that? You know what I mean? And she also says that she killed her because she wouldn't leave Dave alone. And she mentions about how, like, she put her in the trash, took her out in the trash, and Dave probably helped her take out the bins without knowing, like, helped her put her out. You know what? How sad is that, right?
Mm.
And she also mentions in these emails that she stabbed her in her car, like, in her own car. So investigators now are like, because they did look at the car, but they just did, like, a surface level sort of look in the car. They didn't, like, pull up out the seats and things like that. And by now, Lockie, this car is long gone. It's been sold, right? So investigators eventually locate Carrie's car, and they re-examine it, and they pull out the seats, and they find massive blood stains on the passenger seat of her car. But they have to pull off, like, the covers and stuff to find it. It's, like, on the foam. It's, like, drenched in there. Anyway, DNA results confirm that the blood belonged to Carrie. So they are sure that obviously Liz has killed Kerry.
Yeah.
It took months for the investigators to arrest Liz. And obviously they're just, they've got no body. And like a lot of the stuff is circumstantial. You know what I mean? Although they have connected her to all the stalking and things like that, no one saw her.
Yeah. We saw her do anything.
Do anything. Exactly right. Mm. Anyway, so they're trying to build a case. As they're trying to build their case on Liz, Dave stumbled upon an iPad he had in storage and he handed it over to police because police are just saying to Dave, anything, I don't care what it is, anything that could help us, just give it to us, right? Now, on the surface, it looked as though it had been completely wiped. This iPad was completely clean, right? But any true crime fan knows, Lockie, nothing is wiped clean. Like, you can find everything, right? They were able to recover 11,000 photos on there that had been deleted. Now, forensic analysis found thousands of deleted images, and they believed that this little SD card was actually from Liz's phone around the time that Kerry went missing.
Yeah.
And among them, remember that guy, Tony? He's looking through them. He's looking through them and bingo. He's like, what the heck is this? Something caught his eye. Quote, I wasn't sure what I was looking at first, but it turned out to be a human foot with a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
And the tattoo was of a Chinese symbol for the word mother. And Kerry had that same exact tattoo on her foot.
Yeah, so they knew. They were looking at Carrie's foot.
Yes, and they also knew from the from this photo that her foot had started to decompose. And she had definitely had died. Like, she was dead. Like, it was her foot was dead. I don't even know. Like, do you know what I mean?
Foot was dead.
You know what I mean? She had died, and this photo was definitely after she had been murdered.
Yeah.
Because apparently there's certain veins that become more visible, when you die and things like that. So they could tell that it was post-mortem. So it is estimated that Liz sent over 15,000 emails and up to 50 text messages to, like, pretending to be Kerry. And Lockie, she would spend 40 to 50 hours a week stalking Dave, this chick. Yeah. Can I just tell you something? Imagine she put her mind to something else productive.
And, like, I think what gets me the most about this is that Liz was being Kerry this whole time. Like,
yes!
Liz was sending all the stalking emails to herself. She was burning her own house down. Like, that's just wild to me.
Isn't it? Just spending all this time. And knowing that she's got freaking kids.
Yeah.
Like, and a lot of this stuff, like, you know, I think that when her house burnt down, like, her and Dave had just sort of called it, like, off. Like, they were going to cool things out. And then her house burns down. And then, do you know, I mean, they get back together. And then this happens. And then, do you know, I mean, they cool it down again. And then, like, something else happens to her. So I feel like every time they were cooling it off, something massive happened. You know what I mean? Yeah. And obviously, she was, like I said earlier, Dave was dating a lot of other women in between, but anytime he'd start talking to someone else, she'd scare them off. And then, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then Liz is like, Liz wasn't getting scared off. Like, she was his one constant. He thought like he was going through it with her, but the whole time it freaking was her. Something though I do need to mention, because all right, so yes, she was spending all her time doing this, she had kids, but also Lockie, through this whole time this stalking is going on, Liz was in a relationship with another man. Did this blow your brain? Like, this killed me.
Yeah.
Now, this guy, his name was Todd, and he worked as an IT professional at the sheriff's office. So when they're freaking look, when this Tony guy is looking into, like, the IP address, trying to figure out where all, you know, all these Kerry messages are coming from, they find that he finds that it's from, like, one of his employees. Could you imagine their shock?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Todd met Liz online in 2010, and they dated up until, 2015, and he thought that they were in an exclusive relationship. Freaking Todd. Anyway, during their relationship, he helped her with her bills. When I say helped her with her bills, he pretty much supported her, right? He bought her a car. He let her move into his house with her kids, right? And he cared for them. And so you know how her house burnt down? She'd actually moved into Todd's. Just before her house burnt down, she had moved into Todd's. So it's freaking – that's why, like, I reckon she'd probably taken out all the good stuff and then burnt the rest.
Yeah.
But she left her animals in there. Like, what a freaking savage woman.
Yeah. I mean, don't they say, you know, psychopaths kill animals?
Yeah, that's true. That is so true, right? So in 2013, I found this really interesting, right? He, as in Todd, started getting messages from someone claiming to be Liz's friend, and her name was Carrie. And Carrie would send things to Todd like, oh, if I was with you, you know, like, you know, she doesn't treat you well, but if we were together, I'd treat you real good. And all this stuff.
Oh, my God.
But it's Liz the whole time. Like, she's bagging herself. Just wild. And, you know, like, she'd cook for her children and not for Todd. Like, she treated Todd so mean. Like, she was really mean to him, right?
That's horrible.
I know. Now, Liz confirmed that she was friends with a girl named Carrie to him, but she didn't tell him about Dave, all the stalking, like, that they were being harassed until, like, he never found out about this until ages later. And they lived together from 2013 to 2015. So this is, like, peak stalking period.
Yeah.
Liz was charged with first-degree murder and second-degree arson in 2016. And interestingly, she actually waived her, like, she didn't want a jury. Her rights to, yeah, a jury. She ended up going with just a judge.
Yeah, okay.
Like a judge decision. So she was convicted on both counts the following year, and she was sentenced to life in prison for the murder plus 20 for the arson. And she does not have the possibility of parole, but continues to deny responsibility. She refuses to admit that she did this.
She probably never will.
Yeah, no way. No way she would, right? And I just did want to say, in honor of Carrie's memory, the three investigators that did obviously find Liz was responsible for the murder and all the stalking, right? They established the Carrie Farver Memorial Scholarship, which supports information technology students at Iowa Western Community College. So they just wanted to do something in Carrie's name. So her name was tied to something else and not just this crazy stalking shit.
Yeah.
And you know, like, I haven't written in my notes any details about Liz, but early on her life was freaking interesting as well. I'll let our listeners go and look into that. But what a crazy bitch. I'm sorry, I don't say that often, but far out.
Crazy bitch. And yeah, this is obviously covered in the Netflix doco Love a Stalker Killer, which I'd recommend everyone watch because it was really, really good.
It was really good. So, yeah, I don't know if you've got any other thoughts on the case, Lockie?
Not really.
No.
It's pretty wild.
So wild. But, yes, that's our case this week.
So if you have a case you want us to cover, you can send us a message on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is @caffeinecrimeandcanines, or you can head to our website and leave a request in the request box. If you want to support the podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review, head to our website to purchase some merchandise, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/caffeinecrimecanines.
And until next week.
Until next week.
Bye.
Bye.